Hey, everybody.
Oh, it's doing. My dog schedule has flipped around upside down. Got called for a last minute walk today, so, and I just got home, so my fingers and toes are completely frozen.
Nice. Nice. I can relate. It is also cold in Minneapolis. How cold is it in Vancouver?
You know, it's warm when you're standing in the sunshine, and then as soon as you walk into the shade, it's like -5. So
yeah, Celsius. I know the feeling. Okay, well, good. I'm glad you survived. I'm glad you've got dogs. But you know, we're farther into winter. We're closer to being done than we are to the beginning. So
yeah. Coming out the other end. Great.
Yeah, coming out the other end. That's right. I'm ready to get back on the bike personally. I've been itching to do that. And twice this winter, I've taken my bike out when there was snow on the ground, and twice I've tipped it over and crashed it and made an idiot out of myself. So okay. I'm ready for the warm weather to break that streak. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
It's going good, man. You know, I've just been chilling, just hanging out. Watched a couple movies. Watched this, you know, just finished this up today. Just been grinding out on Fortnite, just like almost done with that. I'm almost like level 100 on that.
How can one be done with Fortnite?
Well, it's like they got the season, and then you get to level 100, and you can complete the battle pass and like get the primary stuff. And then I think you can go to like 200 or 150 or something. There's like bonus rewards and stuff. But yeah, so I've just been having fun with that. Nothing too much, nothing too crazy. Okay. Had a little bit of a snow day today. Got to leave
work. I was gonna say, yeah, a lot of snow in Muscatine today.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, so that was nice.
That's good. It's cold up here. Not too much snow on the ground. I mean, there's a little bit, but you know, not a whole lot. And last but certainly not least, Neil, how's it going this weekend?
You know, it's going actually kind of good.
Nice.
We had a 4-day week this week for work, so I get Friday off, and today and tomorrow are the closest to snow days my school gets. So I get to work from home the whole week, which is rare.
Nice.
Nice. And what will you be doing with all your extra free time?
Playing through Baldur's Gate, most likely.
Nice.
Okay. Stick. So Grace and I just went halvesies on Baldur's Gate, but she's gonna play it probably a lot more before I play it. I gotta catch up on some other stuff. But she of course made her own creative character who was this excessively beautiful character, and then made her companion character not quite as pretty as her character. So, you know, obviously she wouldn't have to compete for, anyway.
Well, the good news is that there's enough like random events and like sometimes things trigger and sometimes things don't, not even based on dice rolls. So when you guys play together, it'll probably be different enough for her to enjoy it again.
When we play together. So I've got a icebreaker question for everybody this week. I was looking through some of my old games downstairs, and I wanted to ask the question. Was there a horrible, terrible video game that you owned as a child that you only realized really in your adulthood that it was actually horrible, and you played it anyway because you were 8?
I might have. I haven't returned to it, but maybe Toy Story 2 on N64.
Where you play as Buzz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember playing that. It was like a 3D platformer. I just remember it was extremely difficult. And there was like, I think the second level was you climb like a tree, and it was like really precise and just like bone crushingly difficult climbing this stupid fucking tree. And you would like get to the top, and there was a boss. And then the boss would like knock you off the fucking tree, and you have to climb up again. Like, it's ridiculous.
What an asshole! I'll give mine real quick while Laura and Neil are thinking of one. I had a Super Nintendo game called, just for clarification, I had a Super Nintendo all the way up until like the PS2 came out, because my parents would not get us a N64 or a PlayStation. Right, so I played my Super Nintendo up until. PlayStation 2 had already been out for a year or two or whatever. Wow. So had it forever. And I had this game called Spider-Man X-Men Arcade's Revenge. Horrible, horrible game. LJN game, for those of you who know what that is. And you it's like level-based platforming game, and you get to choose like which character you're going to play as, and then they have different levels based on the characters. So you could play a Storm and do all this crazy underwater shit, or you could play a Cyclops. Here's the kicker. Playing as Wolverine in this game, you could not use his claws without every time you would hit somebody with your claws, you would take damage too.
What the fuck?
Like, I would understand if maybe like when you take the claws out, like, you know, you get a little bit of a damage hit, but every time you hit somebody with the claws, you would take damage. Like, it ruined the whole power fantasy of being.
They were
Wolverine.
Really taking that one line in the first X-Men live action X-Men movie super seriously.
Does it hurt? Every time.
Every time. Every time I lose like 2 HP.
Yeah, it was just horrible. I'll send you guys a video of it afterwards. It was so ridiculous. And like, Cyclops had this kick where it looks like he's like crouching, and then his leg bends at like a 90-degree angle in front of him to kick people. It's stupid. Anyway, Neil or Laura, do you have a horrible, awful game from your childhood that you want to talk about?
So my childhood, my mother had this weird tirade against video game consoles. So we were never allowed to have one in the house at all as a child. I was allowed to play computer games. And so let me tell you, I have played some interesting educational games. I think I'd have to put like Africa Trail under one of them, because it's sort of like Oregon Trail or Yukon Trail, all those trail games that were very popular, except it was so hard and you had to bike across the continent of Africa. And you never win.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
cool.
And also I learned very recently that one of the creators of the game is like he was on like Behind the Bastards as an awful person. I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah. So, what would you get, like attacked by lions and tigers and shit?
It's just that the math in the game doesn't work out. So like, you just always run out of money through the game. So like, you have to buy food and like spare tires and stuff, and like, if you don't take the rich doctor guy who will like heal your wounds for free, like, you're not gonna make it.
Well, I guess therein lies the lessons: always bring a doctor.
No, I remember, I don't remember exactly which Oregon Trail it was, but it was one of the one it's probably one of the first games where it was like they had like you had like the still image of like the character, and it was a photo, and then if you spoke to them in town, it would be like a short video of them like introducing themselves and like answering your question.
Mm-hmm.
which was kind of cool. But I remember there was one guy in town who had like rock bottom stats, but he had $500. so if you added him to the party, you had like
that
the
sounds
most
like Yukon Trail. Were you panning for gold?
No, it was Oregon Trail. I just don't remember which number. Like, along
and then
the
there
line.
Was Amazon Trail. I completely memory hold that, where you're sailing up the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
No, that game actually ruled.
Yeah, dude, they should do a Muscatine, Iowa trail where you're sailing up the Mississippi, but you have to like dodge bullets from like juggalos and meth heads and shit.
And like Mark Twain can like give you with them. He's like Virgil, like guiding you.
Didn't Grimes start out like trying to build a houseboat on the Mississippi? And then she married Elon Musk.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Neil, did you have a bad game in mind?
So I typically remember most of the games that I owned as a kid being pretty solid. Mm-hmm. But since my mom was a teacher, I spent a lot of time before like after school sports were a thing. Like, school would end, and I would go to her classroom and just, like, hang out for an hour and a half or two, waiting for her to finish work. And so, I forget what model it was, but it was the desktop Mac that had, like, the blue or red or green, like, clear plastic paneling on the side so you could see inside.
Yeah, and it's a 98 like, iMac.
And, like, okay, so, like, every... It actually wasn't every, but so there was one of those at in like there were like a handful of those in the school, and one at the public library, and they all had like the same three, I guess, like Apple licensed games. So mm-hmm. there was Cro-Magnon Racing, which was like a Mario Kart knockoff where you were cavemen. A second game where I don't remember the name, but you played as a like velociraptor with a laser gun. And you had to like run around the map saving, like you would find eggs, and if you like did the command key, it would like pull them into space, like a alien tractor beam.
Okay.
And then there were two more that I'm willing to bet they were the same developer, but one was called Bugdom, where you were like a roly-poly bug. It's like a 3D platformer, but you could like lightly kick, and you could also like go into roly-poly form and like zoom around, and if you hit somebody at speed, it would damage them. You were mostly fighting like red fire ants and trying to save ladybugs. But they were still like stuck in the like Mario, like early Mario mindset, where you can find some extra lives, but you have a set number of lives, and if you run out of lives, you're done. You don't get to save progress. Mm-hmm. You have to go back to world one.
Brutal.
And that was just like super frustrating.
The laser dinosaur game is apparently called Nanosaur.
Nanosaur.
Cool.
Yeah, well, there was another one that was like Bugdom, where you were a robot, but that I think that came out later, and so I didn't have as much exposure to it.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah, that is interesting. I had a teacher, because I was the Muscatine school system with no money. I remember Mrs. King or Mrs. Ziegenhorn or somebody in like fourth or fifth grade still had an Apple II in their classroom that like we would all play games on every once in a while, but they were like old black and white Apple II games from like the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, it was just like insanely primitive kind of shit.
I do remember somebody, one of my teachers having like one of the early Oregon Trails on not just like the save file floppy disk, but like one of those ones that like is the size of a dinner plate.
Yeah, eight and a half inch floppy or something like that. 8 inch floppy, yeah. Probably. Yeah, yeah. But the ones that are actually floppy, the ones that will. Yeah, cool. Well, guys, that was sure was educational lesson. Old broke ass games we all used to play. So today we are here talking about a somewhat it's funny how we're here to talk about the 2008 Speed Racer movie, and the only footage I've ever seen from this movie was on promos for how awesome Blu-ray discs were going to be before Blu-ray was really out. And you would see this movie on like Best Buy TVs, like that were in the store, like showing off how cool the TV was. And I remember the CG in this movie looking incredible, like so realistic and so colorful and so gorgeous. And I think it was on like much smaller displays. It's funny how you don't really think of an era as having a visual style when you're living through it, right? Like nobody in the 80s was like, wow, aren't all these leg warmers and big hair and neon colors, isn't that all weird, you know? But you know, you look back at the era and obviously it's very it just screams 80s. This movie has such a 2000s aesthetic. And I had no idea until like I watched it and I went, holy shit, this nothing looks like this movie anymore. But anyway, so we're here to talk about the 2008 Wachowski. I'll say brothers because they were still the Wachowski brothers when they made the movie, although they're both trans women now. I don't know if you guys knew that. Are you guys aware of that?
Yeah. Wachowski siblings.
They're another one. That's, you know what, maybe that's the best way to do it, because I never know what the correct procedure is on like,
I just call them the Wachowskis.
The Wachowskis, yeah. That's probably just easier. Okay,
I get it.
Yeah, but made by the let's just say the Wachowskis right after the Matrix, right? Like this would have been right after Matrix Revolutions.
I think after. Well, they did the screenplay for V for Vendetta in 2005.
Okay, but they didn't direct.
No, that was James McTeague, is that?
Okay. There's some movie called The Invasion. But anyway, Speed Racer, Wachowskis. Obviously based on the old 60s Japanese anime that was pretty popular on American television to some degree. And really the only movie that I can really think of that is like this at all is Scott Pilgrim versus the World in its bringing of the anime style to live action. So let's go around and talk about our history with this movie. I mean, I'll just say, like I said, I only really knew this as a Blu-ray promo, and I was familiar with like the 60s. So to some degree, right, I just knew it was a show, and it was Japanese, and it was old as shit, and then it was poorly dubbed. But I didn't know anything about this movie going into it other than that it was just a complete CGI fest, and it was just ridiculous, but it had a really strong cult following on the internet. Laura, did you know anything? What did you know going into Speed Racer?
I'm a bit of an anime buff, so I did understand the Speed Racer like franchise and that it's a very classic anime and slash manga slash, you know, cultural icon. I was not aware that there was an Americanized movie of it at all, so I went into this just like totally fresh. But yeah, it's like it's one of the few early on adaptations of people trying to bring an anime style to real life. And it's certainly an attempt, and I think we've gotten better at it. Like I see so much of this like with the wipe transitions and not in like Into the Spider-Verse and stuff, and like these other consecutive movies coming after it. I'm like, oh, now like you're seeing the predecessor in real time.
Yeah, I think that's true to a degree. So you never saw like previews of this when it was coming out in like 2007, 2008?
Nope.
Okay, interesting.
Might not have been hugely advertised in Canada, so.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? That's why it's good to have an international cast of hosts. Neil, how about you?
Yeah, like I never watched the anime in any meaningful way. I remember having a friend who lived down the block whose dad was like really into vintage Japanese stuff. Like he had all the like bad Godzilla movies on tape and would just like have them playing at all times. So like I'd seen like clips of Speed Racer and then more in a more modern sense, I've been exposed to like some videos that I shared with you guys about Speed Racer being a sociopath in the end. But I remember this movie coming out, like I remember seeing previews for it. And I for the longest time, I thought it was like, or watching the previews, I was like, man, did they like de-age Leo DiCaprio? Because I with the helmet on, I would swear to you that it looks like Leo DiCaprio to me, but it's a actor named Emil Hirsch, who I don't know if I recognize from anything else. But that's about the extent of my experience with it. So this is a totally fresh view for me.
And Gideon, you've seen it before, right?
Yeah, so I was fairly familiar. I watched a lot of Boomerang growing up, which is just like, yeah, 60s and older cartoons and stuff. It was right by Cartoon Network for me. And so I was a little bit familiar with that and maybe seeing like, yeah, like YouTube clips like early on. So I had some familiarity with this. And I remember watching this like once with my dad, like on DVD around when it came out, and then like never again. And I had rewatched it. My letterbox says last May. So I'd seen it semi recently, almost a year ago now. But yeah, I don't know. I really, really liked it. I'm really curious to talk about it and hear you guys' thoughts. And I think it's one of the most, like, I don't know, just crazy off the wall CGI movies pushed to the absolute limit that I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's you know, the perfect way to say it. I mean, there's no understating or overstating how bonkers this movie is on a lot of different levels. So just as a basic synopsis, Speed the whole racer family, him and his whole family are obsessed with racing. When he was a kid, his older brother was racing and he, you know, died under like mysterious circumstances. And there's like foul play was involved, and there's all this drama surrounding like the owners and the teams and the sponsors and whatever. But anyway, they all believe that like some dirty shit happened to his brother. But Speed grows up to want to be a racer just like his brother anyway. And so he is, and then events transpire. He's offered sponsorship and he turns it down. And then the whole racing community hates him. And it's like, he continues to be an independent racer and tries to like defeat corruption and uncover the mystery surrounding his brother through the power of racing. I mean, would that be a sufficient synopsis of basically what's going on?
I'd say that's pretty good. Yeah.
Okay. That's like fair enough. Let's start with high level thoughts. I think that Speed Racer is like almost unimpeachable as a crazy fun action movie. You know, I don't think it goes to like the very tippy tops of it wouldn't go into like five territory for me just because it is structurally very safe. It's just like structurally such a summer blockbuster, and I don't think it pushes the boundaries enough in terms of like what I expect from a summer blockbuster movie. But in terms of like what I said to Grace as soon as we finished was like, if I had seen that in the theater with a big bowl of buttery popcorn and a giant icy Coke, I would have gotten my money's worth. Like that would have been the greatest theater going experience of like that year to me, for sure. Mm-hmm. When you're watching it at home, it's a bit of a diminished experience. So I think comparing it to movies like a movie that I would like really want to give a 5 to, it's like I'm not as emotionally compelled to give it a 5 as something like better, like Blue Velvet or Bone Tomahawk or something. But I still thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed myself. Like if we were I don't want to like skip to scores already or anything, but like just to illustrate my point, I would say that like if we were still giving decimals, it's the kind of movie I'd give like a 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just thought it was like totally awesome on so many levels. So, Laura, how about you? I'm really curious about you, and Neil as first time watchers.
Mm-hmm. My ultimate summary is this is a soul sequel to a Spy Kids movie, and it's like Spy Kids 3D meets Hot Wheels. And I don't mean that as insulting either of those things. I'm like, you know, if I was 10 years old, I would be like glued to the screen, be like, yes, just plug it into my veins, of course. Mm-hmm. Also, if I was 10 years old, I would probably find the plucky brother child way less annoying. But, you know, you take a real risk when you put plucky children in there. And monkeys.
Yeah, that kid was so funny. I love that kid. How about you, Neil?
This movie is ass.
No.
dude.
Interesting.
It really suffers from being like a 2 hour, 15 minute movie. I was like just in the opening sequence. I remember like I was trying to like be invested in it, like not have my phone out. And I was like, okay, so like we're about 45 minutes into the movie, and then I checked the timer and it was only 15. And I was like, oh no, it's gonna be one of those.
Oh no, dude.
No, I do get the comparisons to Spy Kids and Scott Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. But to me, like, I get that this is like meant to be a cartoon in a lot of ways. So I don't want to like rag on it too much for being cartoony. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the CGI is not good.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to compare this to Spy Kids, Spy Kids 3 came out in 2003. This came out in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a 5 year difference. This came out a year after the first Michael Bay Transformers movie. Obviously, like, there's like differences in like the artistic direction that's going to have an impact there, but I thought this was like the comparison I actually made was to Bo is Afraid. Like, this was like indulgent, like self-indulgent on the director's part.
Mm-hmm.
Me.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll, at a point, I'll have a note about, you know, what you're saying about the CG when Sam wants to get there.
So you didn't watch them fly into Royalton Industries and think to yourself, wow, this is like Blade Runner 2049, but good.
No, I didn't think that. I thought that they had like spliced in a still from what was that Robin Williams movie, Robots?
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, another masterpiece. What are you talking about, Neil? Anyway. So let's talk about some specific things. First of all, I want to say that the casting in this movie is perfection. Okay, who cares about who plays Speed? Speed could have been anybody.
I think Speed's John, great.
He's great, but it could have been any actor that kind of fit that same mold, right?
Steve Buscemi.
John Goodman, so awesome. Susan Sarandon is the mom, perfect. Christina Ricci as Trixie, perfect. I even love that little annoying kid and his monkey. When they were showing the two of them on the couch, and then the kid's wearing the monkey pajamas, and then it pans over, and the chimp is wearing like the human cartoon bananas or pajamas. I thought that was so funny. And then Racer X, who looks exactly like Albert Wesker, really made me laugh. That guy was awesome. The Royalton guy was awesome. Any thoughts on the casting? I thought this movie was like excellently cast.
I wanna comment on the names of like the family. Because I feel like so many characters have like really cool names, like Racer X and Rex, you know, and Speed and Chim Chim, the monkey. And then you got Spritel. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, I think of John Goodman like sitting at home, just like looking around, and he's like, oh, I'm drinking Sprite. Let's call him Spritel. It's like, oh my god.
Two thoughts. Number one, everyone in this movie is, and I think this is part of why Sam likes, everyone is named like they're in Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah. Dude.
Oh, totally.
You are named for your purpose or a weird characteristic about you.
Exactly.
Neil, I have to ask this, not to cut to the very last twist at the very end of the movie, but was the ending 45 seconds of this movie where Kojima got the idea for Metal Gear Solid 5? It was shot for shot, dude. Anyway, any other thoughts on the casting of the movie? Simon and John Goodman, so awesome.
I'm gonna push back on you, Sam. I don't know that it's like perfect casting. I will say it's star-studded. Like, they got, like, every, like, five-second cameo. And it's like, I recognize that person. I recognize, like... The Wachowskis were definitely, like, leveraging their position to get name-brand faces into this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were still cashing in on the... On the Matrix hype, that's for damn sure. Which is okay, you know. You make a movie as good as the Matrix, you can get some A-list actors in your movie. I got no problem with that. Okay, not much to say on the casting. That's okay. Does everybody want to talk about the CGI in this movie?
Yes,
that's like the main thing.
Okay, Neil, let's hear it. Let's hear it. I can. I'm taking the leash off.
Okay. Look, It's just not good. There are elements of this that are tied to the art direction, which I think was actually good. I liked the art direction for the movie. And so when things are like holding still, it's fine. There's certain scenes that like aren't meant to be like intelligible as far as like how the race is progressing. It's more like the word that comes to mind is like spiritual, but like Speed like finishing the race and like goes into like plaid, like it's just like nothing around him, it's just color. I get it, but like there's so many elements where it's where they do that like cheap effect of like everybody else around them is like being sped up to like 1.5 times. And I think in particular, the races suffer for it in that, like, it's so fantastical. A lot of the racing moves that they do and like the Hot Wheels-esque loop-de-loos, that you like lose track of where you actually are in the race. Like, is Speed winning? Is he losing? I have no clue. Like, I need the announcers to tell me. Because, like, you know, it's more complicated than like the Daytona 500, where it's just going around a circle however many times. It's, you know, it's Mario Kart, but you as the viewer, I feel, don't really get to know, like, you know, how long is this race? Where are they in terms of finishing? In particular, I think this really comes into view with the second race, which like for a while I was like, okay, we're at the climax, like they're doing all these things, and then I realized, oh no, there's a whole other race to go. Like, I was just, this movie shocked me. I'm still processing a lot of it.
Neil's review's headline is going to be "Slow Racer." You know, it's funny that you feel that way about it, man, because honestly, like, I'm always the one complaining about movies that are over 90 minutes. I did not feel the length of this movie at all. It just, like, I don't want to say it flew by. I definitely, like, was aware that it was a 2 hour and 10 minute.
215, I think.
215, yeah. 215 movie. And I didn't care. Like, I knew we were gearing up for that final race, and I'm glad that you mentioned when the movie goes plaid. That last 15 seconds of the Grand Prix, one of the best action sequences I've ever seen in my life. Like, it just focuses on the track, right? It, like, all the crazy shit's happening, and then it cuts to people's reactions just getting more and more extreme. Like, yeah. And then it goes to plaid at the very end, and like, we were watching it in pitch black on the OLED screen on max brightness. And just, yeah. Just getting my eyeballs blasted out of my head. I was having such a fucking good time. Laura, how did you? I want to hear, Laura, you talk about the CGI and how you reacted to the visuals.
Yeah, so as Neil would say, I'm going to push back on that a little bit. I don't think the CGI was necessarily bad, because again, they're sort of working with what they have. What I thought sort of made the movie a bit disjointed is definitely like the physical lighting on the characters. Like, I don't know if everything to do with the characters was filmed first or alongside the CGI. It just seems like the lighting op team for their physical, whatever they were filming physically, was not like informed or aware or skilled enough to be blending in such hyper color. Which I don't think the hypercolor was a bad thing. Like, to me, it's candy coated. It's refreshing. Like, I've, you know, watched movies in all the 2010s when things are just gritty, dark, oatmeal, shady, gray, like, and they're just so boring. So seeing this like hyper candy saturation is like really, it's fun to look at. But unfortunately, they have to film and light the actors in like, in a physical world, unless they want to like oversaturate their skin to be like pink. So there is a little bit of like, you can see those cut lines where they're just sort of pasted on the screen with chroma key and whatnot, but they're just, the actors are real and the CGI is larger than life. So the backgrounds are sort of like eating the actors.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I think I would agree with you guys on the CGI is that like, sometimes when the movie is going through its slower, more character-based moments and it's just people talking to each other on a clearly CGI set, it kind of like loses the plot with its CG a little bit in the visuals for me, where it's just like so colorful and so garish that when everything's still, it starts to look fake and very color barfy. Mm-hmm. But I definitely agree. Like, I think that like when this movie is when it's too slow and the visuals aren't going by at a million miles an hour, it's a lot more noticeable, like the ugliness of the special effects. But I think when it's sped up, I think the effect is like pretty awesome, at least for me personally. Gideon, how about you? You want to talk about the CG or the special effects at all?
Yeah. I don't know. I think on the whole, I just find it pretty remarkable. Like, I think it, for me, is like one of the best looking CGI movies of this time and era. And it feels like they just like fully commit super hard to the source material and trying to stay true to that. Even almost at the cost of like alienating some people probably. Because it seems very divisive on like IMDb and maybe even Letterboxd a little bit from what I saw. But I mean, I love it. I don't think the CGI looks really dated for me. Like, I feel like it kind of enhances it, even when it does kind of teeter into like Uncanny Valley or like elaborate Zoom backgrounds, you know, shit like that. Yeah. This whole movie feels like an elaborate Zoom background. But I like that. Like, it's like you do get lost in, okay, like, where the fuck is Speed? Like, where are the characters? Like, this movie literally will give you whiplash. It's just so breakneck with its speed. And I don't know. It's just, I really dig it. And it's definitely my jam. But I can understand, like, people being like, I don't even know what the hell is, like, going on right now. Like,
I think we all, to a degree, understand its divisiveness, right? Like, we all could understand, like, why some people would really like it and why some people would really not like it. You know, it was just one of those movies where I just kind of put my brain away, and then, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. Like, one of the Letterboxd reviews that I really agree with is, this is the perfect movie for 12-year-olds, and then it says in parentheses, non-derogatory. Geez, I mean, what else do we want to talk about? Like, I don't feel like talking really about much about the plot.
No,
you know,
not to like, have another racing pun, but it kind of takes a backseat to everything else. Like, it's such a spectacle movie, and the like car foo shit going on. This makes me wish like I had a car like his, and I could, like, when I get that road rage, just bust out them buzz saws and slice them in half, or like flip, kick them off the road or something.
What did you guys think about the whole Rex being dead, not being dead thing? Because my initial reaction was like, oh, I really hope that Racer X isn't his brother, because that would be like a really obvious and really predictable way to take this. And so I was really happy when about halfway through the movie, three quarters of the way through the movie, they're like, no, your brother's dead. I'm not him. I was like, oh, thank God. But then at the very end of the movie, when it's revealed that he had like plastic surgery and he like totally changed his face and it actually is Rex, I was like, oh, that's, I can't believe they took it that far, and they found a way to surprise me with that twist. Even though it was like the most predictable, obvious twist ever, they found a way to like juke me, like break my ankles a little bit on your expectations, and then wiggle that, like, they just wiggled it right past the goalie there at the end. And I was like, oh, they actually did that kind of in a smart, interesting way that I wasn't expecting. So, I mean, what'd you guys think about that?
I think that Oh, go ahead, Gid.
I was going to say, I don't fully understand the character's motivations for wanting to, like, be a different person and, like, stay dead, basically, to his old family. But I think it makes him and Speed, like, their relationship even more tragic. And I think, for me, it, like, kind of strengthens what I would say is, like, besides all the visuals and crazy action shit, like, I feel like this movie has a very well done emotional, like, core with their relationship specifically.
I think especially with like some of the scenes with John Goodman and the sons, those were like really emotionally affecting to me. Like, watching his fight with Rex go down a certain way, and then like watching him learn from that and have the same, like, Speed is kind of doing the same thing, but he approaches it in a much different way because he learned about it with his failed relationship with his previous son. That was all like really emotionally affecting to me. Not that like the movie hinged on that, but it's always nice to have like a little emotional heartstring moment, even in a movie that isn't, you know, really dedicated to that. Laura, what do you think of the whole Rex Racer thing?
Yeah, I agree. In that, if you're going to put Susan Sarandon and John Goodman in a movie, like two of the most talented, grounded actors who can like make fairy puke seem absolutely real and believable, I'm just like, yeah, you're going to get a good emotional core to your movie. So at least, like you said, thank God for good casting, casting talented people to bring what is essentially extremely over the top plot of just like, he's dead. No, he's alive. And we're like, okay, I do believe this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this holds as well as a good for a, you know, a comic book movie brought to life. You know, did John Goodman and his sons and Rex Racer have any effect on your cold, cold, brutal art?
I will say that the juxtaposition between how John deals with Rex versus Speed is probably the most well done moment of the movie for me as far as like traditional screenwriting. But I think that overall, like, this movie is lacking in any kind of like we mentioned that like the plot doesn't really matter too much in its own way. But like I feel like characterization in this movie is incredibly weak. Like Speed himself is a one-dimensional character. Like the opening sequence is like, you know, he doesn't focus on school. He doesn't he's just always thinking about cars and racing. John Goodman probably has the most character depth with like being a grieving father and like having his own passions and how those things can conflict. But you know, like tell me like a real characteristic about Mom. Tell me a real characteristic about Trixie. Like Trixie to me is actually one of like the biggest wastes in the movie. Like her whole backstory is that she sees, you know, 10-year-old Speed like driving around his little pedal car or whatever, and is like, yep, that's the guy for me. And then later when they like pull off the ruse where she's driving instead of the Japanese guy, like, oh, she can drive competitively too. Like they literally brush it away in that moment with her saying, like, you've always told me that I'm good enough to drive in this. Like, okay, maybe you should have told us that an hour ago.
That was a little weird. I agree that it was weird. I had the same thought when Trixie was suddenly driving the car. I was like, what? Really? Like, aren't these guys supposed to be like fucking Dragon Ball Z character versions of race car drivers? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I agree. I thought I missed something, honestly, when that was brought up. I was like, what's happening? Yeah.
So the one thing I'll say is that like Spritel is annoying in like the way little kids are, but I did really enjoy him at times, particularly it's fairly early in the movie where he gets yoked out on free candy and he's like driving with a chimp through the facility while Freebird plays. That is a redeeming feature of the movie. That one scene definitely made me laugh for a good bit.
That was pretty awesome.
But one thing I do want to point out about Spritel, again, with this like weird lack of characterization, is that like he is not even a glimmer in John Goodman's eyes during like that whole prequel, or like the whole setup of like Rex and Speed. You know, there's that cool like significantly older brother dynamic going on, which I think could have been used more effectively. And then we see Speed being 18, and like, man, Susan Sarandon and John Goodman replaced Rex real quick. Like, oh, sorry, honey, we've got to have two sons at all times.
Yeah.
That makes his name even funnier. Like, he definitely was just named after a Sprite can just laying around.
Yeah, I looked it up because like everybody else's name pretty much is like a reference to something, and like Google's like, yeah, there's a company right now that's called Spritel. Like, and
they cut him a
or you may be referring to Spritel, a character from the 1960s Speed Racer. That's
weird. I'll look into that and see if like the katakana, or if it's like a weird translation from Japanese that, like, a weird Americanization of a Japanese word that makes a little bit more sense. I'll do some weeb research and get back to you.
The one other point, or basically two other points that go together that I want to point out is, I did enjoy Royalton, Roger Allam's Royalton character. Like, even though, like, the moment he showed up and I was like, oh, he's a rich Englishman in like, quote unquote, like, middle America, like, oh, here's the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved just, like, how ham-fisted he was about it. Like, he's just obviously the bad guy from the start, and he's just playing it up. I thought his performance was great. But this is another one where, like, I think this is a kid's movie, mm-hmm. but there are certain moments where I questioned that.
Yes.
And one of them is his, like, when Speed turns down signing with Royalton Industries or whatever, and he goes off on, like, how stock car driving has always been rigged, and it's, like, the centerpiece of the economy. You know, Iodine Motors stock went up 12 points, allowing them to avoid the buy. It's like, this is, like, the same criticism of Star Wars Episode One. Like, oh, God, we're talking about trade disputes again. is this for 8-year-olds? Like, and there are a few other moments where that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Where, yes, like,
this is mostly a movie for 8-year-olds until they get into these, like, long villainy monologues, and they're like, we have to go into the deep backstory to explain things, and that's why it's a 2-hour and change movie.
Dude, it was a movie for 8-year-olds up until that snake guy whipped out an actual gun in the middle of a race. That was the that fucking made me laugh out loud. Like, he was all out of cool car, like, Mario Kart gadgets, and he was just like,
although I will say, in today's political climate, one of my thoughts was, like, in 2008, people must have looked at us and be like, this is so ridiculous and over the top. And today's billionaires were like, no, you didn't go far enough, honey. Give us more flamboyant camp. The sky is the limit with the villainous billionaire evil guys.
Yeah, what's the line from Pirates of the Caribbean? You best start. Believing in cyberpunk dystopians. You're in one. the villain in this movie, I thought, not the guy who runs Royalton Industries, but, like, the lead gangster, I thought for sure was Jeffrey Rush, but then I looked it up and I was disappointed to find that it was not the guy from the Barbosa from Pirates of the Caribbean. But anyway, so we're coming up on about an hour. Do we want to start wrapping up and give it scores?
I do want to shout out a couple favorite moments I've got. Okay. And I don't know if anybody else has some, but they can chime in for sure. I really like, this movie has a lot of moments like Episode One, where that pod race, the dude just fucking eats it because Sebulba throws the wrench. He's like, yeah. You know, there's, like, I think it's the second race, like, not the ghost race, but let's say, like, the tropical one. Where one of the Japanese racers, like, flips and then, like, kicks down on one of the other racers and they crash into, like, a mountain or cliff or something. And he's just like, woo! And he just, like, smiles at the camera. So that was awesome. I think
now this is pod racing.
I think on this watch, I noticed that Chim Chim and Spritel, like, Spritel or Chim Chim throws, like, his shit at one of the guys. And the guy, he doesn't just, like, taste it, but he puts, like, a good amount in his mouth. I was like, oh my God, dude. Like, we all know that was shit. Like, you don't need to fucking do this. Right. And then the last one I can think of for now, but, dude, like, when he cold starts the engine, at like, from then on to the end, it, like, again, pun intended, but, you know, my heart was racing with that. Like, that shit was awesome. So I really, really, really dug that and how it gets all trippy and psychedelic and just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go ahead and commend in terms of favorite moments. I think, like we said before, a lot of the John Goodman stuff with him and his sons is quite good. And in terms of action sequences, I mean, I think the last race in this movie is, like, one of the best action driving sequences I've seen. And certainly in terms of like movies that embrace this sort of anime Skittles in your eyes for 2 hours kind of art style, delivered, especially like that last 10 to 15 seconds of the Grand Prix where it's just going absolutely insane. Is like they just spent the rest of the budget in that one scene. I just loved every minute. Well, every second of that, I should say. Like I wouldn't say there's like a whole lot of super memorable moments for me, but just that last sequence I just thought was incredible. How about you, Laura?
I just, rather than one particular moment, I just want to give like an honorable mention to the editing to this movie, because like that must have been like a third of their budget, because there's very few actual cuts scene to scene. Everything is an object wipe, either left to right or right to left, or just like some thing, like somebody's face sliding across the screen into the next scene. And I'm just like, that is so much editing and so much chroma key. You just abused your editors at the whip putting this
No,
movie together.
I was dreading like every time, oh God, it's another face just rolling across the screen.
You have to know who the character, but I can see how they're still yoked to a manga, really trying to be. And to what Neil said earlier is like, yeah, the characters are a little one-dimensional, because yeah, it's a manga from the 60s. There's not going to be a ton of depth to it, and so you are getting a sort of like futurized manga feel to it, and that's why I associate it with like that the modern like Into the Spider-Verse, because you can see sometimes they have like action lines in little scenes, or like the little ink inflections. But as you, it's like blink and you'll miss it, and it's usually covered up in a lot of other CGI. But you're like, oh yeah, you get little manga references, and
Or
that's fun to see.
even like that shot of, I think it was the second to last race where he jumps out of the car and speed is literally a 2D like flat image for a bit. It's like just very, yeah, manga or anime right
Yeah.
there.
And Neil, are you going to tell us your favorite scene was when the credits rolled, or?
No, like I said, there were a couple of moments I was like, okay, I'm enjoying this. Spritel rocking out to Freebird was pretty good. And while like thematically I didn't think it worked very well, I really did enjoy Royalton just like going off on speed, like that's how the real world works, and you need to the unassailable position of money, like I was on board. I was on board for it.
Was a pretty good impression. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, that was good.
Huh. Well, you know how much I hate the English. We need to infiltrate. I think that's pretty much like the end of my major thoughts about it.
Okay.
All right, well then let's wrap up and give us scores. Keep going, Neil. What are you gonna give it?
This is like the lowest possible two.
Okay.
It doesn't fall into that one category. It's not like reprehensible. Obviously, like there's effort and craft that went into it, even if I don't necessarily like it. And you know, there were a few moments that I enjoyed. So it's not a one, but I cannot see myself watching this ever again.
Yeah, fair enough. I
Okay.
think that's a
Yeah.
fair assessment of it. How about you, Gid?
For me, it's kind of between like a 4 and a 5, definitely, depending on the day. I'd give it a 5. I really love this movie. I love how hard in the paint it goes, how it just fully commits to this zany fucking vision. Like even the tiny bit I'd seen of the original cartoon, I feel like it just feels so faithful, and I just love how insane it is. It's like a nice comfort or feel good kind of pick me up movie for me. And yeah, I don't really have any nostalgia for it because I don't really remember anything from the first watch when I was like a kid. But yeah, I don't know. I definitely am excited to revisit it and show other people. I want to shout out the ghost race at the beginning too. That was excellent. Racing his brother, and then when he like goes through his like shadow ghost of a
Yeah, dude,
car.
that's like me trying to get my Class A license in every Gran Turismo game is like racing my
Yeah,
ghost, and it's like that far away from me.
yeah,
Oh,
yeah.
thank you.
So, yeah, I just love this movie.
And what did you give it in terms of stars?
Well, I'll give it a 5 today. Yeah.
You give it a 5. Damn. Okay.
Yeah. I love
this. Okay. I will say that I'm going to give it a 4. For me, a 5 has to be like a 5 has to like touch my soul. Like it has to like reach through the screen and like I feel like a 5 has to have like changed me in some way almost, if mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And this just isn't that kind of movie, no matter how good it would be. It just doesn't. It's not the kind of movie that's going to do that. But in terms of like a fun movie to sit down and watch, or like a blockbuster or something, I'm going to like watch with a big icy Coke and a thing of popcorn and some milk duds. This is up there with like Pacific Rim for like one of my favorite blockbuster kind of fun movies. So mm-hmm. yeah, definitely a 4. You know, back if we were doing decimals, you know, I'd say 4.5 for sure. But you know, I gotta keep it to a 4. So what about you, Laura?
Yeah. So similar to what you say, like 10-year-old me gives it a 5. 36-year-old me gives it a 4 because like it is a fun romp. It is enjoyable to me. It is like going from the absolute introspection of you know, the Green Knight, and I did watch the Another Round movie. Unfortunately, I was not able to participate in that. And just those like deep, soulful life lesson movies to this. It's like, hey guys, what if cars go vroom vroom fast?
For 2 hours.
And sometimes that's all you want. Like that's its own mood. So yeah, it's a 4. It's enjoyable if that's what you want.
Awesome. Well, has there been another movie on the podcast we can think of where everybody gave it high scores except for Neil? Neil, maybe you would know best.
I can't think of one.
Let me pull up our spreadsheet from last year.
While we're doing that, who do we think was going to go? Who was going to pick next?
I think it was either going to be you or Laura.
Well, I just picked Speed Racer.
Or not you. Sorry, I meant to say Neil.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd forgotten that this was going to be my pick. So we're going to leave it as a viewer surprise while I think about that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Can't wait.
Sometimes that's what you got to do. I also really like the idea, by the way, of, I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think we ever went into a discussion about having the option to do this, but I really love the idea of bringing a movie that's acknowledged as a classic and before we all watch it, saying this will not count towards scores at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
As if to say, like, we want to discuss it, we want to watch it, but we don't want it to skew the like results and be the number. We don't want a Seven Samurai to be the number to be eligible to be the number one movie, because of course Seven Samurai is going to be top 3, right? Or so like I would love it the next time I've got a pick coming my way, I really want to do Taxi Driver, but mm-hmm. The only way I would ever feel comfortable bringing it is if I could exclude it from being scored, because I think it's that good and I think it would like, you know, be pretty high on our end of the year list. So
yeah, that makes mm-hmm. sense. We can kind of check it out without having to worry about that kind of thing and just
yeah
get our own experience and see.
Yeah, I think it's a nice way to bring a classic without feeling like too try hard about it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like playing your little brother in Pokemon and showing up with like, you know, your level 99 Charizard, just boom.
Yeah, just going back over our scores. The two that stand out to me as far as like me being a hater. Well, okay. Bo is Afraid. Sam, you give it a 3. Gideon, you give it a 4. I give it a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Phantom Menace, I still gave it a 2. Sam gave it a 3. Gid gave it a 4.
So awesome.
and then
yeah, two of them.
Hard Boiled, everybody gave it a 4 except for me. I gave it a 3.
Hmm.
Okay, well, I would say this is definitely the widest gap then for Neil v. everybody else. So that's.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly not I think we've had one or two of those before with Midnight in Paris, where I was like, there was a five, and everybody else is like, you're fucking nuts. So, all right. So, okay, interesting. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on that for the future. So, Neil, go ahead and get back to us with whatever our next week's movie is, and I'll get this posted, and I'll see you guys next week.
Sweet.
Sounds like a plan. Take care,
All
everybody.
right. Peace.
Pleasure,
Peace
guys.
out, guys.